College football rolling along here in the offseason. Obviously, it's transfer time as you get to June and July. Then August, you got to be where you're going to be as fall camps start all over the place. But certainly transfer portal, could we start seeing it more tied to name, image, likeness here in the not-too-distant future? Joining us here to talk about that. And more from 247 Sports, Chris Hummer joins us here on 3 and Out. Chris, welcome to the show. How are you?
Doing great. Thanks for having me on, guys. I appreciate it.
Hey, we appreciate you coming on. And obviously, in, 2 weeks, we're expected to see, you know, name, image, likeness come on board in several states out there who have laws going in effect on July 1. This, of course, if Congress or someone doesn't supersede that. But are we seeing a lot of posturing towards states that are going to have name, image, likeness rights as these recruits hit the transfer portal, as that those are the prime destinations to go to at this point?
Yeah, I mean, I think a lot of schools that are in states that do have name, image, and likeness laws are going to certainly play that up from a recruiting perspective, both with high school kids and transfer kids. But at the end of the day, it's kind of a short-term thing. Like, I think the expectation nationally is there will be some sort of federal legislation by the end of the year. So while the schools that are going first are at a pretty big advantage in the short term, like over the long term, I don't think it's going to make that big of a difference, because I want to say the expectation is, like, you never know how Congress is going to work nationally. They tend to work at their own pace, but I think the hope from a lot of administrators is there will be something in place by the fall or the end of the year, which would kind of mitigate some of the advantages there. But yeah, certainly going to be a big thing for schools, like right out of the gates, pushing that in terms of recruiting.
When you look at the transfer portal at large, how has it changed the dynamic of roster construction? I know it's impacted recruiting. I know certain schools around the country still have a couple of slots open, or maybe even have held a slot or two open. How has it changed the way coaches go about building their rosters?
Oh, I think it's completely altered the way coaches look at rosters. If you look at a program like Michigan State, like, I think they've signed 15 transfers this offseason.
15 transfers for Michigan State. We lost Chris there. We're trying to get him back. But, yeah, we saw Texas State didn't even sign a high school kid there, BJ. So we're trying to get Chris back. We had him and lost him there. But certainly transfer portal is changing how coaches view their roster there at the national level. I think we have Chris back here. Chris, are you with us?
I am. Sorry about that. I think my cat might have stepped on my phone or something. My bad.
Chris Hummer joining us here from 247 Sports. And go ahead and finish what you were saying about, you know, teams. You mentioned Michigan State signed 15 transfers. I think Texas State didn't even sign a high school kid this year, and how that may be changing as we move forward here.
Yeah, it's completely changed roster construction. Texas State's a great example, as you said. I talked to Jake Spavital about that earlier this year. Like, he didn't set out to do it, but they had better players available from the transfer portal. They probably would have signed via high school players. So it's completely changed the way coaches look at things. I think last year we saw 500 fewer high school players sign at FBS programs, which is a pretty massive number. I don't know off the top of my head, but I think that's like on average about 4.5 kids per school. And when we talk about the scholarship crunch that's going to be coming up, because the NCAA has given super seniors an extra year and everybody in the roster an extra year, but hasn't expanded the roster cap moving past 2021, so we're going to see schools really lean heavily on the transfer portal to fill needs instead of maybe signing fringe high school guys like they had in the past. So for contenders, it's a way to fill needs. For kind of middle-tier programs, it's a way to load up and kind of add talent quickly. And for kind of some of the teams at the bottom, maybe it's an opportunity to sign some high school guys you wouldn't have had the opportunity to do so in the future or in the past. So there's a lot of kind of working, kind of moving pieces there.
So, Chris, I mean, with all that being said, you mentioned the 500 fewer kids out of high school signed with, you know, FBS schools. It seems to be working for the schools at large, whether they, you know, P5, G5. I see certain, you know, I see the Jackson State wide receiver, you know, go to Michigan. But is it working for the players in general? Because I know it didn't work out at school A. I want to go to school B. How many of these guys go to the transfer portal and never come out?
More than you might think. I'm actually working on a story about that right now, but I think I did a study in like 2018, 2019, so the first cycle of the transfer portal. Less than 50% of FBS players ended up staying in the FBS level when they entered the transfer portal. And I would imagine those numbers look significantly worse these days, given the volume of players entering. This year has seen over 1,000 more than we have in the past. So it's a pretty risky proposition. And some, like, formerly really elite high school players go in thinking they'll have the same level of attention they did coming out of high school, and it's a very different story. I think 2 years later, when you don't have any game film and you just have, like, kind of grainy practice tape, it's not quite the same thing as what you were 2 years ago when you had all the potential in the world. So it is a potentially risky thing for players, for sure.
And you look at, as Ben said, the way it's put together, do you feel that it is working as currently set up? Or will the NCAA or someone step in and say, okay, maybe we need to modify the way the transfer situation is working so you don't end up with, as you said, a glut of players looking to transfer and nowhere to go?
I think the NCAA should certainly look at the scholarship cap moving forward. Not just the 85 limit, but the 25 kind of cap per cycle, which is a really limiting thing for schools. Because right now what you're having is, like, big transfer classes leave. So, like, if a school loses 10 scholarship players 2 years in to the transfer portal, they can't replace those players quickly enough with that 25 hard cap each cycle. So you're going to see roster situations where coaches take over and they're at a severe disadvantage because they're working with one hand tied behind their back in terms of scholarship numbers. I think a lot of coaches would tell you that. I've heard that complaint for years now, and it's only going to be kind of magnified with everything that's happening with kind of scholarship limits right now. So I think the NCAA does need to take a hard look at that.
We've seen a number of programs bring in high-profile guys through the transfer portal, including the Georgia Bulldogs. Obviously a very good roster to begin with some of the guys they've added, do you think Georgia maybe it's gone up a notch in terms of the preseason rankings or maybe even their own expectations with some of the guys they've been able to add through the portal?
I don't know about their expectations, but going into kind of the offseason with Georgia, especially given some of the cornerback attrition they had, lose two guys to the NFL, first, I think, 34 picks. They had two guys come off the board, and off Tyreek Stevenson, their starter Nickel, to Miami via the transfer portal. Like, they had some questions. But when you add Darian Kendrick, when you add Ty Key from West Virginia, who was an All-American Nickel there, you add Eric Gilbert, you add talent across the board, I think Georgia's gone from a contender with some question marks to a place where if they don't win a national title, I think it's a bit of a disappointment. Kirby Smart has his quarterback. They have all the weapons in the world, even with George Pickens kind of likely missing the season. I don't think there are many excuses for this Georgia team heading into 2021.
And Chris, how much does that make this transfer portal kind of trending? I'm talking about the teams that got a shot to win the national championship. Obviously, everybody's trying to go get them a Joe Burrow. When you look at what he was able to do for that 2019 LSU team, you look at Georgia this year, adding guys like Gilbert and Drake and those guys. How much is it? Obviously, they're going to use it, but how much is it if it doesn't work, they kind of go back to their bread and butter of just straight recruiting guys out of high school compared to if they do put up a run like that 2019 LSU team? Are they trying to, you know, really utilize the transfer portal as a means to just fulfill needs for guys to come in and play right now?
Yeah, I think that's the scary thing about Georgia, Alabama, Oklahoma, Ohio State, some of these programs using the transfer portal. Because not only are they adding the top guys in the portal every year, like, I think Alabama signed our number one overall transfer and Henry Toto in 24/7 Sports' rankings. They also signed Jameson Williams from Ohio State to kind of bring in and shore up that wide receiver room. We're seeing, like, these contenders, these annual contenders, sign two of the top 20 transfers filling needs. Plus, they're still signing elite recruiting classes. Alabama just signed the best overall recruiting class in 24/7 Sports history in 2021 from a pure numbers perspective. I don't really think anybody's going to ever match that 2017 class. But when they can do that and additionally add Henry To'o to kind of fill a knee at middle linebacker next to Christian Williams, that's a pretty scary proposition. I think Nick Saban said the rich are likely going to get richer via the portal. He doesn't love the rules, but he's going to play by them. And we've kind of seen that. Alabama, Georgia, Oklahoma, Ohio State have all really kind of gotten who they wanted via the portal, and they can still do that while signing elite high school classes.
Chris Hummer, 247 Sports. And Chris, looking, I know we're still a couple months out from practice even starting, but what do you kind of expect from quality of play perspectives potentially in college football where, you know, some teams played 13 games last year? If you didn't make a bowl game in the Big Ten, you played, what, five or six? Does that have a factor where you could potentially have guys who have played not even half a season of football? Some people who have opted out, haven't played football essentially in a year, now coming back trying to play college football again. How does that affect the quality of play that we might see, maybe even especially in just the first month of college football?
Yeah, I mean, it could be a little choppy for some guys. Like, for example, like I think Old Dominion hasn't played in over a year. I'm sure that team is not going to be quite as ready to go as the people on its schedule. But I think all in all, we saw really sloppy quality of play last year because of everything that was happening. Like, COVID protocols limited the number of practice teams could have. Most teams didn't have a spring. This offseason's been totally different. Everybody's gone through a full spring. They're having full off-season conditioning workouts. They're allowed to work out on campus, which is huge. There were so many players last year that came in the fall just, like, completely out of shape because they didn't have the equipment necessary at home to kind of do those workouts. So I think, if anything, at least when you compare it to what we saw last year, I expect the quality of play across the board to be much better is kind of what I would look at it with it.
Chris, finally, college football, obviously looking ahead to a potential expansion of the college football playoff. Assuming we get the 12 teams and you have more access, more pathways into the postseason tournament to determine a champion, could that result in a little more parity in recruiting and maybe even in the transfer portal if, you know, you could go to maybe a G5 school, still make it to a championship? Or
I think it absolutely could. I think that's going to be one of the main benefits of an expanded playoff. I don't know if it's better for crowning a champion, but it certainly introduces more parity, as you said. I just think selling the opportunity to make the playoff is such a big thing for a team trying to make the jump. I think in the BCS era, I think upward mobility was a little easier because only two people made the national championship every year. But there were plenty of teams that said, like, if we build there, we have a chance to kind of get to that point. And right now, with the level of dominance we've seen from Alabama, Clemson, Oklahoma, Ohio State, and Georgia kind of in the playoff mix, along with Notre Dame, like, it's kind of shut out some teams, opening up the doors for an Oregon to kind of push back into it, for a USC to kind of get back into it, for even a Texas, if they get things to get back into it, would be huge for those programs from a recruiting standpoint. And I really do think it could make some of those five stars who are automatically going to Alabama because they think that's the best place to win and develop think twice because they can win other places potentially.
Chris Hummer, 247 Sports, our guest here on 3 and Out. Chris, we appreciate the time. Thanks so much.
Yeah, thanks so much, guys. Appreciate it.
Appreciate it. Chris Hummer joining us here on 3 and Out. Apparently his cat there for half a second, hanging up the phone as well. But transfer portal has changed the game. As he said, we've seen guys, we'll talk about it in just a little bit, from Georgia. Guys jumping into the transfer portal looking for a place to go, and sometimes it works out and sometimes it doesn't in terms of having a place to land. But quickly before we step aside, how do you guys feel on the whole the transfer portal has worked in college football? Has it been the free-for-all? Has it been good for the players? Has it been bad for the players, the way it's kind of executed and been turned into here in the last year plus?
I think it's been good and bad. It's been good for the guys for whom, you know, still get that same credibility of not losing that attention, going, you know, without leaving these big time schools. I try not to look at a guy like Joe Burrow as the barometer, because that's a pretty steep, you know, hill to climb. But he kind of is, because that's what everybody's looking for. Kevin, we always show, just go get Nick Saban. You see what one player can do for an entire roster, even though that roster was stacked. I just think that, think about it. Alabama, it has the best recruiting class in 2021, and they got the number one player in the transfer portal. So it's like the rich ain't getting richer. No, the rich just bought a freaking yacht. That's what they're doing at that point when you look at it, because they're already a step above everybody else. So it does work for the guys who got that game film, because if you were non-quarterback, you may not ever leave out of that.
We've got more to come. Go ahead, BJ, real quick. Sorry.
No, I was going to say good and bad. I think what Ben said makes sense. I like guys having options, but the impact on roster construction, recruiting, you know, potentially concerning as well.
We've got more to come here on 3-9, including in the transfer portal. Georgia sends a Southeast Georgia product, puts himself in the transfer portal. We'll get to that next. It's 3-9 on the Southern Pigskin Radio Network.